We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Halliburton takes it in the backcourt. 6 seconds to go. Crosses over on Beverly. Float game for the win! Tyrese! The terror!
This is Tyrese Halliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Hey, Sir Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast. And the Indiana Pacers have a 2-1 series lead over the Milwaukee Bucks, winning 121-118 in overtime in a thriller. Tyrese Halliburton flashing. Has the go-ahead shot with 1.3 seconds left, hits the free throw, ends up sealing the deal for the Pacers. There was so much going on tonight, but let's start with this overtime. Crazy stuff is going on, but I'm curious, how are we feeling?
On top of the world. I just think that what we saw tonight, I truly don't think that we're ever going to forget. I don't. This was a moment that will sit with us for years to come. We've been on the end of countless heartbreakers. I mean, LeBron game winners, or, you know, the goaltends that they don't call in the past and everything like that. If you stuck with this team over the years, tonight the basketball gods rewarded you. This is something I will not be forgetting anytime soon.
I mean, it was just such a back and forth game. And really, if you go back to the first quarter, Indiana gets out to a 17-point lead. Everything feels like this is going to be a 30-point win. Dame gets hurt. Obviously, Middleton was questionable coming into the game. And then all of a sudden, the Bucks just kept chipping away and chipping away and chipping away. They take the lead in the fourth quarter. Indiana looked like they're about to blow this game. And it felt like, oh my God, are you serious once again? But the Pacers, they never gave up. They were resilient. They fought to the bitter end. And we get to overtime, Fauci. And I'm thinking to myself, how are they going to end up being able to win this game? They had a possession that lasted for almost 2 minutes.
Yep.
They had 5 offensive rebounds in that possession. I think one of them might have been a call to foul or something like that, but it was just constantly being involved here. They don't get a shot on that possession, but they kill like 2 minutes of the 5-minute overtime period on one play. Chris Middleton goes down, goes for a dunk. Miles Turner just barely touches him in the back. It's enough to affect the shot. He misses it, but he gets 2 free throws. And then I think it was at the tie game. How did the Pacers tie the game? Do you remember?
In overtime, let's see. So in overtime, there was 10-point score. It was a little bit of everyone. You had Nembhard hit a basket. That was big.
Yes, Smith that's what happened.
Had that three.
So Nembhard hit the basket after Middleton did that, right?
Mm-hmm.
He hit that step back to tie the game up. You're right. And so then the Bucks missed, and the Pacers had a crazy play again, and Nesmith hits a buzzer three in the corner. And he's been terrible.
Unbelievable.
He's been terrible shooting wise, not just this game, all series long. He's just not hitting shots.
It was electric because I just felt like when Siakam passed him that ball, it was like a desperation, like someone's got to shoot it. And when Nesmith went up with that, I went nuts. And I would try that little ball of string and the paperclip, you know, from the meme from SpongeBob for Nesmith any day. because that shot right there, it made me feel like, all right, you know what? There's no way Middleton can do it again, right? I was wrong. I mean, this game had a little bit of everything. My emotions, Alex, I was a nervous wreck going through these ups and downs. I started thinking, like, just let us have one. And in the end, Middleton banks it in again, tied up at 118 apiece. Only problem, you left too much time on the clock.
I will say this. If we go back to the Neesmith three, he was 0 of 6 from 3 when he takes this shot. He's shooting Facci a horrific 22.7% from 3 through the first 3 games. Now, Aaron Neesmith once led the NBA in 3-point percentage this season.
Feels like a lifetime ago.
I hated almost every shot he took tonight for the most part. A lot of rush shots, but anyway, we'll get into that later. He hits this one. It's kind of funny. Tyrese Haliburton, 1 of 12 from 3 tonight. He was pushing and pressing a lot down towards the end of the game too, especially in the fourth quarter. Just couldn't find a look. But I would just say this: the fact that Nesmith steps up and hits that shot, you talked about it. Middleton comes back down because we know Middleton hit the three to send it to overtime. He does it again and ties it one more time. And he left 6.7 seconds on the clock instead of just 1.1 that the Pacers had in overtime in regulation. So it gave the Pacers plenty of time. And I love the play design. Let Tyrese Haliburton pick up the steam, coming down the court fast and attack the basket. I felt like the Pacers, in most of the overtime and in the fourth quarter, they were trying so hard to make threes or long twos, and they were not getting any good looks at the basket. So you run this play to get Tyrese ahead of steam going downhill. He gets that little switch up, kind of gets Pat Bev on his heels. Pat Bev fouls him, fouls out of the game. He makes the floater. He hits the free throw. The Pacers go up by three with like a little bit of over a second left in the game. And it really just put the icing on the cake and made it that much more difficult for Milwaukee to get another clean look. So I just say that play where Tyrese just went off in that moment right there, had his playoff moment, his moment that we'll always remember. It was just an incredible play design, and I thought a great execution and great for Tyrese to have that moment.
Couldn't agree more. Love the play design because when the Pacers were trying to inbound previously, Haliburton was like in a straitjacket the way they were playing defense on him. There was times where he was not even able to even get the ball. So loved how he had the running start. First, I was worried, is he going to have enough time to be able to get a good look? But yeah, the way he was zigging and zagging, I mean, Pat Bev was truly going back and forth, side to side. That's the second game winner he's now hit on Pat Bev in the past. Love it. And you got to
Good
give,
point.
Patrick Beverley credit on defense. He played really hard. Haliburton had a rough shooting night, but the thing that I could live with and that I love is that he didn't stop shooting. At one point, he was 7 of 21 before he hits that last shot. That was the biggest shot. And that's all we've asked is like we could live with it if he misses, but don't be afraid to take it. And that moment, him hitting that shot is how you build a legacy. And I'm not talking brick by brick like the shots he was missing, but that's laying down the groundwork into this is your legacy in Indiana. Alex, I wish I was in that crowd. You were there. What was that eruption like when Haliburton hit that and won?
Facci, it was incredible. It was the best game I've been to in my life as a Pacer fan or someone
Unbelievable
covering the
watch.
Pacers, right? Like the crowd was incredible, especially from the start. You kept seeing people tweeting about it, like,
Yeah,
man,
very
this
real.
Indiana crowd for a 5:30 tip-off, you can feel it in the building. Everybody was hyped, everyone was excited. I think they did a great, like, even the national anthem was getting a ton of love when they introduced the starting five. Like, you couldn't even hear them say the Bucks starting five. They were booing so loud. Everybody was erupting with cheers for Tyrese Haliburton, Andrew Nembhard, Turner. Like, the whole group got a lot of love and a lot of praise. Pascal Siakam got a ton to start things out. And then you bring out the most popular woman in the world besides Taylor Swift, Caitlin Clark. Bring her out, have her rev it up. The crowd's going crazy.
The
I
right move.
mean, Anthony Richardson, Colts quarterback's in the building. Tony Dungy's in the building. You know, the who's who's of Indiana were here
I agree.
for this game, and you could just feel it. It felt like, man, we are on top of the world. And it kind of got quiet there when the Bucks sucked the wind out of the building. But I will say, the Pacers fan base did an amazing job coming to life in those crucial moments. You could feel the anxiety in the building. Everybody was anxious. Everybody was just like, what is going to happen next? Can the Pacers stop Middleton? 42 points. What's going to happen? And then Tyrese hits the dagger. And Tyrese, his energy tonight from the dunk that he had, the offensive rebound tip slam that he had earlier, like, looked like a totally different player. Led the team, like you said, in shots tonight. 22 field goal attempts. And you know what? He had a triple-double. Second triple-double of his career tonight. Yeah. And he happens to have that in his first home playoff game. So just honestly, like, you can't say enough about what that crowd was like and what Tyrese Haliburton was like in this game.
You really can't. Honestly, like I mentioned before, I was a nervous wreck to the point where when it was overtime, there was about 15 seconds to go. Maybe it was, I don't know, maybe there was like a minute to go. My wife got a FaceTime from one of her friends. I just hear them talking about some random stuff. I just turned to her. I just gave the look. And she was like, I'll leave. And just like picked up and left. And it was like, not now, babe. Like everything is on the line here. And it was just that moment. I mean, I was standing up glued to my TV, just saying, please, please give us this one. Like, and for Haliburton to come through like that, you mentioned it, you know, a triple double. I believe this is only the fourth playoff triple double for a Pacer. So he's in elite territory. But I mean, 16 assists. We knew that there would be some special games. We thought maybe, you know, hey, he'll go off eventually. Yeah, he didn't maybe go off scoring-wise, but his imprint on this game, it was everywhere. You talked about he was 1 of 12 from 3. It's gross. But the 3 he hit was big in the fourth quarter. Like, yeah. His shots, that he didn't stop shooting, that's what we needed. And this was a night where, you know, Siakam didn't really have it going the way that he had before, and you needed guys to step up. And I felt like in overtime, fourth quarter, guys stepped up. I mean, we talked about Haliburton and all that. But, like, the big thing that we got to talk about is the second chance points and the offensive rebound. Just to put it in perspective, Alex, they had 32 second chance points. I looked it up. It's the fourth most in any playoff game in the last 25 years.
Wow.
The amount of offensive rebounds, they had 6 in overtime. Yeah. I mean, think about how tired these players are at the end of the game. To be able to come up with these offensive rebounds, that's digging deep to say who wants it more. And in this game, when you saw it, you could be a neutral fan, you could be anybody. You watched it and you said, I think the Pacers just want it more.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, in that stretch, we talked about it, like, just kind of briefly kind of skimmed over it. I said, like, they had a possession for a minute and 40 seconds. Tyrese Haliburton was the one that got the first offensive rebound. And then Andrew Nembhard had like 3 in a row.
He wouldn't quit.
Andrew Nembhard is fighting on the glass with 5 fouls in overtime and
maybe
doesn't pick it up.
The court, maybe.
He was a man amongst boys out there. I mean, Andrew Nembhard was so, so good in this game. And I go back to what we've talked about with our previews and things like that. And we're really like, we're both pretty high on like Aaron Nesmith can be the X factor, but I brought up Nembhard could be the X factor for this team. And I feel like the last two games he really has been.
Yes.
I feel like he has been. And we talked about Portis kind of being an X factor for Milwaukee, but I also said they need Chris Middleton to be all-star Chris Middleton to have any chance to beat Indiana. And he was that tonight.
He was all NBA tonight.
The 42 points is a career high for Chris Middleton in the playoffs. So the fact that, you know, he was putting this team on his back. And I thought one thing that was really interesting, and I want to bring this up here because I was late to notice, because when you're at the game, there's a lot more going on when you're just watching at home. I will say this. Damian Lillard was guarding Nembhard for the majority of the time he was out there, but they switched it, and they put him on Nesmith for a while. And I thought that was a great move by Doc Rivers, because Aaron Nesmith is not the level of screener that Andrew Nembhard is with that, you know, that – is it not an inadvertent? I'm trying to think of the inverted pick and roll. Excuse me. I always mess that word up. Inverted pick and roll. And I thought the Pacers just kind of let Dame play no defense, because they just kind of put Nesmith in the corner for a lot of the offense there, especially in the fourth quarter. But for some reason, like the last few minutes of the fourth and overtime, they put Dame back on Nembhard and they switched it back up to put Middleton on Nesmith. And maybe Middleton was just tired, so they were trying to save him offensively by doing that. So that makes some sense to me. But Doc Rivers said that he was dealing, Damian Lillard was dealing with an Achilles injury that he re-injured in the fourth quarter after he already had the knee injury that took place in the first quarter. So he couldn't hang with Nembhard, and Nembhard made him pay on the offensive glass. And I just wanted to say, like, I thought that was very, very important to what happened there in that stretch.
We don't win this game without Andrew Nembhard. We don't. I know, obviously, Tyrese hits the unbelievable shot. Miles Turner had 29 points. We'll get to that. Andrew Nembhard was just battling. He was hustling. We talked about the shot that he hit. That was huge to tie it up. But those offensive rebounds just gave the Pacers so many opportunities and was just like sucking the wind and the life out of the Bucks. And I just felt that seeing that was just like, he just wouldn't quit. And those are the type of plays that every single team needs. You need an Andrew Nembhard that's going to dig deep. And I just felt that that's exactly what he did. And yet, I mean, Damian Lillard was, I didn't even know if he was going to go out there at the end. There was a moment where he was on the sideline and it was like, you know, I read afterwards that he told Doc Rivers, hey, I'll go out there. I'll be a decoy because he's banged up. He's banged up right now. And I think the Pacers, they see him out there. You have to attack him at every moment. We'll see what happens as it relates to his health status for Sunday. But yeah, Andrew Nembhard took advantage of that matchup when it mattered most. Dame was nowhere to be found on those offensive rebounds, the defensive rebounds, but it turned into offensive rebounds for us. And I just think that that was such a big difference maker in this game. The Pacers had 19 offensive rebounds. That does not sound like the Indiana Pacers to me, but I love every second of it.
Well, they have more size and they're more athletic than the Bucks, right? I mean, when
right
I say
now,
more
yeah, no,
size,
Giannis, that's a big difference.
When I say more size, I don't mean more size than the Bucks. I mean they have more size and they're starting five than they used to. I want to make sure I clarify that. But they are more athletic than the Bucks, right? Like Brooke Lopez, when he's out there, like
he ain't athletic.
He just looks a step too slow. And I think
he's a dinosaur.
You'll probably see when Giannis comes back, Lopez not out there and more of a Portis Giannis 4-5 matching up with Indiana, which I think makes more sense. But we'll have to see how healthy Giannis is and if he plays in game four. Rick Carlisle did allude to that he thinks that there's a good chance he could play in game four just because I think everybody's just waiting for it to happen. Now they're down 2-1. If Dame has got this lingering injury, like is there more pressure on him to come back out there? I don't see Middleton having another career high in playoff points. I mean, I think that like he gave like an all out like Chris Middleton great game and they took an L in that, and I think that's a big win for Indiana that Middleton had like probably one of the best games of his entire playoff career, and resulted in a loss. Like that's a big thing for the Pacers. But I want to go back to the fourth quarter here, Fauci, with about 6 minutes left. You talked about it, Tyrese Haliburton, the only three that he made, it was massive. He gives the Pacers a 2-point lead with 6 minutes left, 99-97. Lillard comes down, of course, gets fouled, makes two free throws. Pacers miss a three, but Tyrese Haliburton gets another offensive rebound, and he makes an 11-foot driving floating jump shot. Great job by him. And then, of course, Lillard gets fouled again because that's kind of like the MO of Damian Lillard. Mm-hmm. And so then the Pacers turn the ball over. Lillard stole the ball. This is where Lillard kind of like clamped up Ty when he tried to drive to the basket. And Bobby Portis makes that three in the corner.
I was worried.
The Bucks took the lead. You felt the momentum shift. And this is when Miles Turner steps into the play. He hits a huge right corner three and ties the game back up. The Bucks call timeout. Middleton comes down and scores. And then they run a pick and roll where Haliburton finds Turner wide open for a dunk.
Beautiful.
And it was those two plays by Turner to keep the game within striking distance that I felt like really helped the Pacers stay afloat in this, because Indiana then goes on a little bit of a run here with Nembhard getting fouled, making one of two, and then Siakam getting the and one and missing it and making it 109-106. That if he makes that free throw, that totally changes the game. But I know I'm saying a lot. I just wanted to say that stretch there was big, and I want to give a lot of credit to Miles Turner for matching those shots from the free throws from Dame and Chris Middleton's big shot, because I felt like Miles was absolutely incredible offensively, shooting wise, in this game.
No, he really was. 29 points, that's a career high. 22 points in game two, that was a playoff career high. He's bringing his A game. But yes, as it relates to that sequence that you talked about, there was a span. It was like 2 or 3 minutes basically where no one scored.
Right.
And it was, things were getting really, really nerve wracking. I'm going to be honest. I'm not a very superstitious person. I changed my shirt. I was wearing a Pacers polo. I thought to myself, Pacers have lost the last two times I've worn this. Changed. I'm wearing the Pacers Finals shirt from 2000. I don't know. I'm not going to take any credit for this game at all, but I needed to get that shirt off. Anyway, going back to it, Pascal Siakam grabs two really crucial offensive rebounds during that span. Juan was the one that saved it. Nembhard gets fouled. Yep. Misses that free throw. Honestly, when the camera turned to him, I looked at his face. I was like, looks a little bit nervous. Hasn't been in like a big moment like this before. He goes one of two. All right, whatever. Siakam gets that rebound. All right, it's lays it in and one. When he missed the free throw, I was like, oh no, like don't do this to us. And it did come back to bite the Pacers, because if they do hit those free throws, even one of them, you know, maybe Middleton's in a spot where he can't, you know, that three doesn't tie it up. So you got to hit your free throws. But I just felt that, yeah, when you're talking about Turner, the performance that he had tonight, he was rock solid throughout the game. The 29 points are great, but he was, it's not like it was like, oh, he did a lot of his damage early on. He was consistent throughout each quarter, essentially giving the Pacers anywhere from like what felt like 6 to 8 points in most quarters. Like in the third quarter, he poured in 7 points. And then I think in the fourth quarter, he had like 6 or 8 points. It's just like he kept bringing it. And I just feel like for Turner, like this is everything that he's waited for. And now he's stepping up to the plate and being that leader. And I mentioned it a little bit earlier, Siakam carried the Pacers through games 1 and 2. I think that he did everything he could. In game 3, like, you needed other people to step up. He can't just score 35 a night. And, you know, while I did think they should have gotten him more touches, I thought Milwaukee defended him very well. But it was guys like Miles Turner that really stepped their game up to the next level. Obviously, we touched on Haliburton. And I just think that overall for the starting five, I mean, they all range anywhere from 13 to 29 points. I think you had that type of, diversity in terms of scoring.
Yeah, I thought the starters were really good in this game. And the bench, it had its moments, but I felt like towards the end, like, this bench is just not very strong right now. And I hate to say it like that. We love McConnell. We love Shepherd. We love Obi Toppin. And I thought Obi Toppin was absolutely awesome in the first half.
First quarter.
First quarter.
Yeah, first quarter.
Like 11 points.
That was huge.
Did you hear the chants on the TV? Did you hear the chants on the TV for Obi Toppin?
A little bit. Yeah.
The whole entire arena bust out into an Obi Toppin. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so funny.
Who would have thought that?
We're getting Obi Toppin chants. I think that Tyrese got some MVP chants there at the end on the game winner. And my favorite was when Bobby Portis went to the free throw line.
That was great.
The crowd chanting Bobby sucks. Okay.
Yep.
You know, ref you suck is a classic when they don't like a call, but like Bobby sucks. I like that Bobby Portis didn't respond to the crowd and just kind of like was like taking it all in. I think that kind of like motivated Bobby. I think honestly, like Bobby likes to be the villain. So I don't know how much that was like great strategically by the Pacers fans to do that, but it was a very cool moment. If you're a Pacer fan, probably being able to chant that just because it's just like, after what he said about them being front runners and things like that, you know, whatever. But it was honestly, though, you brought up a great point about Pascal Siakam getting those two offensive rebounds and the way that Milwaukee defended him. I still don't think they really double teamed him much, maybe a little bit here and there, but it was just a much more physical brand of defense from Bobby Portis. And, you know, some of those step backs that he was hitting in Milwaukee, he just wasn't hitting in this game. Like, they're still tough shots. And he might not have been getting as clean of a look that he had been getting, but still, we thought, you know, from our conversations with different people, like double teams could come and really make it more difficult. But, you know, Milwaukee, they really can't afford to double team because they don't have enough defensive help. And I thought one of the nice adjustments that Doc Rivers did make was put Andre Jackson Jr. in the game. His length, his defense was big for the Bucks, kind of cutting down that lead there in the second and the third quarter because they just don't have a lot of room for error. And Pat Bev is a guy that can really play solid defense, but he picked up some stupid fouls on back-to-back plays, like right back-to-back. Yep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Derek Kramer from my Pacers looked at me and was like, why is he cheering about that? Like, that's just stupid. Like, it's okay to be physical, but, like, he was, like, cheering the fact that he got two fouls right there. And then he picked up two other cheap ones later and got himself fouled out of the game. I know that he fouled out, like, at the end of regulation or end of overtime, excuse me, but still, like, Why are you cheering about stupid fouls when they're not necessary? Just play defense. So overall, though, I just thought the way that the guys just kind of kept their composure. They never once allowed the Bucks lead to get bigger than three. That was the largest lead Milwaukee had all night. And I know Indiana had a 19-point lead at one point, but still, 3 points. Once Milwaukee kind of got momentum, Indiana never let them run away with it.
And that's the thing, because there was a moment when the Bucks finally took the lead. Like when Bobby Portis hit that three and they went up three, I was like, you know, we had really just led like essentially the whole entire game. Like it's going to be hard to get this lead back, but the Pacers took every single punch on the chin and just kept fighting. They kept matching the baskets, and it was just, it was intense, man. It really was. Like this was a game that put me through the works, but this is why you love this team so much, because we have been let down a lot this year. We have. You know, the Pacers have had some really bad losses, but when you finish the job and you get this one done the way that they did, having that Tyrese true game winner. He had a lot of big shots this year where he put teams away. This was a true game winner. Like you mentioned, his first playoff game at home. And I just feel like, what a moment. Like, This is what it's all about. This is why you want to be in the playoffs. Because after a night like this, you're really thinking, I'm confident we can take this Bucks team down. Because I think that the Pacers, at times, they haven't put it all together. They've had their moments. But, like, when they do put it all together, you're looking at a really good Pacers team, specifically in the first half. Indiana at one point had 22 assists on 27 shots. Yeah. They were just doing amazing. I mean, you talked about that first quarter a bit. When McConnell hit that three, I just felt like that place was erupting. And yeah, it was like, that's a playoff atmosphere that everybody wants to be a part of. And I just feel that tonight, when you look at the starters, you know, just about everybody played 40 minutes. I know that this was a game that, you know, obviously went into overtime, but you need to have your best guys out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the Pacers did, and it worked tonight.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Now, let's get back to the show. Yeah, well, let me just tell you this right here, Fauci. The starters tonight, they played 28 minutes and 45 seconds together as a unit. They outscored the Bucks 65 to 56 with that lineup. The other lineup that played 3 minutes and 17 seconds was one of those first substitution lineups. It was Turner, Halliburton, Toppin, McConnell, and Shepard. They outscored Milwaukee 10-2. Everybody else was around like average numbers. Halliburton, Siakam, Nesmith, McConnell, Shepard, which was a very weird lineup. They played for a minute 30. They outscored them 6-2. And then you had another lineup of Halliburton, Siakam, Toppin, McConnell, and Shepard, and they outscored them for three, by three, 5-2 in a minute 16. But here's where it gets kind of interesting. The worst lineup of the game, Ben Shepard, TJ McConnell, Aaron Nesmith, Pascal Siakam, and Jalen Smith.
I knew
in three
that
minutes,
was coming.
They got outscored 8-2 by Milwaukee. And then you take out Jalen Smith, put Obi Toppin with that group, and they played a minute 41. That was probably in the fourth quarter. They got outscored by five. And that's when the Bucks cut it to two to start the fourth. So you can kind of see they're like, okay, it's okay to play the bench unit, but you have to be very careful with how many minutes you give them and how long of a leash. And I think that both squads got really tired towards the end of this game. Definitely. I think the Pacers' conditioning is better than Milwaukee's because they play faster. And I think that's why they were able to get so many offensive rebounds on that one possession. The Bucks were gassed, and they were riding the coattails of Chris Middleton towards the end of the game. I mean, it's just that's just the bottom line to me. And Indiana, I think, was more nervous and just taking some rush shots and kind of forcing from three because they had decent looks but not great ones. But I'll just say this. You're right. They have to be much more strategic in terms of what lineups they play and when they play them. I know that the Siakam, Nesmith with the bench unit worked last game in Milwaukee, but I don't think, you know, they adjusted for that. So now what adjustment are you going to make to match that? You know, even though you won, you still have to make adjustments, in my opinion, because you cannot go that long and be that stagnant with, you know, that offensive group. I just don't feel like there's enough creation out there. And maybe you try to stagger where you at least have one of Nembhard or Halliburton out there at all times.
I think that is really important. Just touched on Jalen Smith real quick. We didn't see him at all in game two. I don't know if we're going to see him in game four. The Jalen Smith minutes have not been good at all. Just 3 minutes. There was nothing in those 3 minutes that said he needs to play 4 minutes. You know, so I don't think we're going to see him. And for Obi Toppin in specific, the first quarter, he was 5 of 5. He finished the game after that going 1 of 6. And I just felt that, you know, just missed a free throw at one point. He had a couple fouls. I wasn't in love with his minutes after the first quarter. So, yeah, from the bench, I don't think there was a lot there outside of that first quarter. So that's going to be – I think they will be better moving forward. I think they're going to have to be better moving forward. But I think that when you just look at the rest of this team, you saw just a lot of hustle, a lot of hustle. I mean, from an offensive rebounding standpoint, Siakam had 4, Nesmith had 4, Halliburton had 5 offensive rebounds in this game. Andrew Nembhard had 3 offensive rebounds. That's crazy. That truly is really crazy. And that's that hustle and heart that we saw. So I think that, hey, if you could survive with Siakam scoring 17 points on 7 of 17 shooting, and Halliburton on the flip side has 18 points on 8 of 22 shooting, I think you're going to be just all right. And I think that we're going to see one of those great Halliburton performances from an offensive side where maybe, you know, he does score 25 points or more. But the one thing I just want to emphasize is, like, we've seen in the first two games for New York, Jalen Brunson has shot the ball so poorly. Like, 29 shots, he was going like 8 of 29, but the Knicks won, and they didn't care what he shot. Yeah. A night like tonight is just like, Tyrese, we have faith. And I know he's taken a lot of heat so far in this series. We're up 2-1. He leads. He leads the playoffs in assists. He had a triple-double tonight. He hit the biggest shot when we needed it most. Give the guy some grace. All right, it's his first playoff series. He's going to be fine, and what we're seeing tonight is a true star in the making. But this team, they have players that step up when you need them most. And I felt like for Milwaukee, when you look at their team, you know, in specific, you know, we got to touch on Damian Lillard. Yeah, he's banged up. He got banged up in the first quarter, like we mentioned. His first half was tough. I know he was battling that injury. He was 2 of 10. The Pacers had gotten torched by Damian Lillard in the first half. That was not the case. He ends up obviously getting it together. He finishes with 28 points. But the 28 points, you could live with. It's still less than what he scored in games 1 and game 2.
Yeah, I mean, Damian Lillard is, you know, it was kind of like a flip the script type thing. So it was like he had a bad first half this time and had a good second half. But what really kept him afloat, he only shot 6 of 20 from the field in this game. He had 12 free throws, and he was 12 of 12 from the free throw line. So that's kind of what kept him afloat. And he had some big dagger threes there in the fourth quarter to kind of cut into Indiana's 10-point lead that they had established there at the end of – or excuse me, at the end of the third quarter. Was it 10 or 7? I think it was 7 because Middleton
– It was 7.
Yeah, because that close of the third was so bad when the Pacers got that steal from Nesmith, and then he just threw the ball right away. Just a major bummer right there. And there was just so many critical moments there where I felt like the Pacers, especially in the second and the third quarters, and really some in the fourth, they kind of got stuck playing Milwaukee's pace.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee was doing a really good job of slowing them down after the Pacers got out to a big lead. And I think part of that is the Pacers, being a young team, took their foot off the gas. I think that they saw Dame go down and things like that, and then they were just like, man, you know what? We got this. We're vibing right now. And there
Never
was a
worked
play.
Well for us.
Obi Toppin made a three, and he starts celebrating and like kissing like his fingers to the crowd, you know, just like just what these guys do. Like it's fun, whatever. Carlisle, as soon as he sees him, he touches him and says, get back on defense. And the next play, he gets the rebound, kicks it ahead to Ben Shepherd. Ben Shepherd drives on Brook Lopez, hits the reverse layup, and gets the and one. That was the first free throw the Pacers had in the second quarter, the first half.
Yeah,
and
that was
Milwaukee
alarming.
had like 12.
Mm-hmm.
It was ridiculous. I mean, the fact that it was 16 free throws to 4 at half, I know that it balanced out in the second half, but it was ridiculous. And I think that Milwaukee would have been probably down closer to 20 if they had officiated the game, in my opinion, more fairly. Yes, did the Pacers foul shooters when they were shooting the ball? 100%. But the fact that you have Ed Malloy calling TJ McConnell for a defensive foul when Chris Middleton clearly sticks his butt out to trap.
That was bad.
Yeah. How do you call that in the moment, a defensive foul? Pacers have to waste a challenge because you just missed a blatant call. And Middleton did that earlier to Miles Turner when they gave Miles Turner the foul and on that moving screen there, whatever, like when he tried to like climb over and get out to Brook Lopez. It was one that I think it was a little bit more questionable, but like even then Middleton kind of stuck his butt out. And Middleton was frustrated because he was in the first half, especially when they were down so much. He like takes his mouthpiece out and just like launches it at the stanchion. Of course the referees don't see that. To me, like I saw Bucks fans and some of our Bucks friends comments saying, man, the Bucks, you know, the referees wanted the Bucks to lose this game. And I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me?
No.
Go back and watch the kind of calls that Dame was getting throughout this game that
Those
nobody
are
in Indiana
great.
Was even getting close to. The amount of times I saw Halliburton, especially Halliburton and Siakam, getting hit when they were shooting the ball, never getting calls like that.
I think the officiating was just inconsistent tonight. I don't think it favored, you know, either. Yeah, you mentioned before, the Bucks definitely had way more free throws in the first half, but Dame was like whistle hunting. And actually, it ended up biting him in the butt later on because I felt like he took a shot that he was not trying to make. He took a shot late in the game that he was trying to get a foul on, and he missed solidly. Pacers got a rebound. He was doing a lot of complaining. Dame was doing way too much complaining to the refs, and he should have been getting back on D. Not that he probably would have made a difference on defense, but at the same point, you want to get back. But I also think another thing is, think about this. The Pacers bench, not a game that you're thrilled about. I mean, they end up scoring about 28 points off the bench. Milwaukee had 6 points. 6 points off the bench. Their bench is giving them close to nothing right now. So that's something where it just shows that this was not the Pacers' best game, but they still put up 121 points. Yes, it did take overtime. This was a slower, slower paced game after the Pacers' explosion in the first quarter, but you just got to give them credit for not backing down, not folding when times got tough, because some of the shots that Milton was hitting, those could have been back-breaking shots.
Mm-hmm.
That just kind of snaps your spirit. I know how I felt. Like I said, I was a nervous wreck. For these players, it's easy to just say, oh, come on. Like, you know, what is that? And you still just get caught up and start talking about that. They moved on. And I just think that, hey, we survived. We're up 2-1. This is the first time the Pacers have had a lead. I mean, since 2018. It's when they went up 2-1 in that series against the Cavs. Or I think it was 2-1. Either way, they went up in that series.
Yeah, they went up 2-1.
I know it didn't work out, but on a night like tonight, Man, I feel like the sky's the limit for this team once they really do put it all together. This isn't supposed to be the year, but you start to look and you start to say, well, I don't know. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get too ahead of myself and say
I'm
sky's
not saying
the limit,
beat the Celtics or we want Boston or anything like that.
I don't even
on.
Know if they can beat the Knicks or the Sixers in the next round.
I don't know.
I mean, they got their butts kicked in game one. They barely win game three at home. They had a great game in game two. The Pacers are just too inconsistent for me.
Very
I really believe in them, right? And their shooting, you know, I think everything hinges so much on their shooting. They were able to win in spite of that tonight because both teams shot bad. And, you know, I think that this Milwaukee team without Giannis, like, you got to remember, like, it's you get so caught up in, like, who's on the court right now. You forget one of the top three players in the league is not playing in this series right now.
It's a
and
big
if
loss.
He was, it feels like Indiana would probably be down at least 2-1,
at
maybe
least,
3-0.
It's very possible. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to grab an umbrella while you try and rain on my parade right now. But
true.
No, look, I just think that as a fan base, we deserve to feel good at this.
Absolutely.
Moment. Because you could make an argument, and if Giannis is healthy, whatever. The Pacers won one game in the playoffs. That would be a step forward. And I know that's sad to even say.
No.
But if they can win this series, I just think no matter what happens next round, you go into this offseason saying, we got something here. We got something. The experience that we gained is so essential. Now let's build on it. And now let's actually have real expectations. Like, going into the season, people, I remember there was a tweet on Twitter. Someone asked Tyrese, what's your goal? He said, playoffs. Not winning the playoffs.
Young Simba.
Make the playoffs. Exactly. Young Simba. To make the playoffs. Now that goal next year, I don't want to hear anybody say, make the playoffs. No, it's we want to go on a run. And I think that we're starting to see them build towards what could eventually be a run. Even if it's not this year, this team, they're hungry.
I mean, I'm not trying to run in your parade because I picked the Pacers to win this series. I know you did too.
It's what here?
In six, right?
Yeah, no, we did.
I just want to tamper expectations. I don't want to say, like, this is a title-contending team.
No, I think if
you look at their bench, it's pretty obvious. I don't think this is a team that can get to an NBA Finals. I know that, you know, Boston, like, they're a team that lost to Miami in Game 2. Like, I don't think that the Eastern Conference is so overwhelming where you feel like, oh, we're going to get creamed by this team besides Boston probably. But even then, like, they've had their moments against Boston this year. They've been able to find cracks in their game. So I just feel like overall, this is a Pacers team that you just got to enjoy this moment while you can. And I think you're right. Like, these wins are so important to just team building and team success. Aside from what happens, like, if Indiana loses this series somehow in seven games or six games because Giannis comes back and the Bucks experience, like they're an experienced team. They don't get rattled. And I felt like they didn't look rattled tonight, and they knew that Middleton was their guy, so they rode him down the stretch. And Chris Middleton, to me, like, the fact that he's, like, 35 years old doing this still, like, he's just an incredible player to me. Rick Carlisle said, like, probably one of the most underappreciated players, and I kind of agree with it because you don't think about Middleton because he has a lot of injuries, but, like, the fact that he's been injured all season long and been able to do what he did tonight, it just kind of shows you, like, he knows what it takes to get to that next level. And for guys like Tyrese, Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, this is all so new to them. So they're still trying to kind of adjust, figure things out on the fly, take it all in one game at a time, not get too high, not get too low. It's just basketball at the end of the day, right? But, like, it's important basketball, and you can feel how much different it is based on how that fan base responded. So I'll just say this, you know, Turner tonight to me was the difference maker for Indiana.
Yes.
He was so good, so locked in. The step back three that he hit to start the game, he just looked like a guy that was a man on a mission, kind of like we talked about with Siakam in the last game, and really took advantage of Milwaukee being in drop and making the right reads, not forcing stuff, but hitting the timely shots when he needed to. And Siakam, he had 17 points. He didn't have the game that he's had the last two, but he's drawing so much attention, and he's a willing passer. He's not just going to force up shots just to force up shots. So to me, this is a great team-building win. They can build off of it. They can be up 3-1 after game four. I believe that. But I just don't want myself or fans included, to get like, I want you to be excited, but I don't want you to be like to the point where you're expecting more than what realistic expectations should be, and then you're kind of let down if they don't reach them. I think that they have big goals of getting there, right? That's what every player should say and do. But they're not going to say, oh, our goal is to get to the first round of the playoffs and make it a competitive series. They're not going to say that. You don't want them to say that. But I think as a fan base, just seeing this team fight the way they fought all season long to get here, that should be what you're excited about the most. Like, just, man, like a proud dad of a kid that just accomplished, you know, riding a bicycle without training. Well, something like that.
Hey, no, I hear you. My expectations at this point are beat the Bucks, beat them. Win this series, because I know now you can. You have game four in Gamebridge. The fans already showed. I mean, there's a lot of people right now, I'm telling you, that want to be a part of what they saw on TV tonight. And they are going to come out. That crowd is going to be rowdy. That is must-see basketball. And I think that for right now, I think that we should have the expectation to say, hey, this series is not done. It's far from done. But we can win this series. The Bucks, they're banged up right now. Maybe Giannis comes back. I don't know. It sounds like that would be forcing it. Do they force Giannis back if Dame's hurt as well? It's like, are you going to really go all in right now just to try and get out of the first round? You know, we got to see. But at the same point, I just think that the Pacers have shown when times get tough, they're not throwing in the towel. And to me, that says a lot. And I think that we've, like I said earlier, we've had a lot of bad losses this year, a lot of letdowns. A lot of, we need a wake-up call. Will they wake up? Hey, in the moment, they woke up, and it didn't take a loss to be able to do it. That lead, that what was a 19-point lead, blew, you know, disappeared, gone. And the Pacers found a way to come back and regain that lead, even if it took every single second left in this game to accomplish it. I'm proud of this team. I really am. And for the 6-year drought that happened between playoff wins of, you know, 2018 to now, I'm not going to say it was all worth it, but I'm going to say I really appreciate this win really bad.
I do too. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think the electricity in the arena, you know, especially in the first quarter, because the fans just came out, man. They were so electric. I couldn't talk about it enough on Twitter. I'm just sitting here thinking, this group of fans is incredible. So every person that was at the game, if you're listening to this, you played a massive role in the Pacers winning this game. It was your energy. It was your, you know, just positivity, believing in this team that I think kind of carried them to a victory. There is no greater fan base, in my opinion, in the NBA than Pacer fans. They are passionate, and they know that, you know what, people might be doubting us. People might have us, you know, as the, you know, the team that's less likely to win. They're going to talk about our inexperience. You know, we don't care. We trust in our guys. And, you know, whether it's Pascal Siakam doing what he's doing in Milwaukee, or it's Tyrese Haliburton hitting game winners, or Miles Turner telling the fans, you know, if you don't like Indiana basketball, you know, this is what it's all about. And I'll just say this. I thought it was an awesome game. And Derek Kramer from iPacers, I think he said it best. The three by Nesmith felt very reminiscent to Travis Best game-winning three in the Bucks 5-game series, because Travis Best was horrific from three in that game, just missing shot after shot after shot. And it was like, can he please stop shooting? Pass the ball, pass the ball. And then when the game needed it with the shot clock expiring, boom, in that left corner, Travis Best drilled that three left-handed. And 24 years later, Aaron Nesmith in the same spot, in the same arena, against the same team, just only in game three versus game five.
That's pretty cool stuff. And, you know, we won't know in this moment where this win ranks in terms of playoff moments. What I'll tell you right now is I'd say within the last 10 years, it's number one to me, because Pacers haven't accomplished much in the playoffs in the last 10 years. So easily goes to number one, in my opinion. I mean, I think 2017, look, there were some good moments in that. You can go back and forth. I mean, Oladipo and that series against the Cavs was definitely electric. For me, at least when I think in quick glance over the last 10 years, this is what stands out to me most. And then you can make an argument over the last 20 years. I mean, it's somewhere up there. I just truly think the fact that it was like Haliburton You know, that whole thing, just his first playoff game in front of the home crowd. Like, you couldn't have asked for – you couldn't have scripted it any better than that, because there was the struggle. And then in the end, you know, there was that – you saw that light at the end of the tunnel. We all got to celebrate this. Everybody, you got to appreciate this. Last thing I'm going to say on that, there's people in my mentions that were just like, Pacer fans even, it's just one playoff game. Guys, if you can't get excited about this, sorry, you're rooting for the wrong team. You're rooting for the wrong team. If a championship is everything or nothing to you, like there's no in between, you're going to be let down, because on nights like this, you got to appreciate the journey in order to get there. No one just comes into the playoffs and wins a ring blindly. That does not happen in seven-game series. It's just way too hard. This is the journey, and you got to appreciate it.
You have to appreciate it. It was terrific. I'm excited to see what happens on Sunday. How do the Pacers bounce back from being up 2-1? Do they get greedy? Do they take game four, go back to Milwaukee with a 3-1 lead with a, you know, three games chance to win one game to win this series? Or do they get comfortable? Do they get excited about this win and come in and lay an egg? I don't know, but they didn't shoot the ball well in this game. So you're hoping that they at least have one game of shooting. And Rick Carlisle said it best. Every playoff game is a different entity of itself. There's always going to be things that change and ebb and flows of the game. So I felt like, you know, Pat Beverly had some really good moments in this game. I thought Bobby Portis had some big shots in this game, and I thought he played pretty solid defense, and they were carried by Damon Middleton. There's no doubt about it. I thought Andre Jackson Jr. had some nice moments. Now they got film on him, kind of see how they can counteract that. They only have one day to prepare. Can the Pacers kind of play their pace and maybe make things a little bit harder for Milwaukee, knowing that they only had one day to rest, and Dame and Middleton might be still a little bit banged up. I mean, I just feel like things are kind of potentially in the Pacers' favor here for they some are. Other, like, you know, some other, you know, different variables that could happen in this next game. I'm getting tired. It's about 11:30, ladies and gentlemen. So sorry if my speech is just a little bit off right now, but I am excited, though, for Pacer fans to be able to experience this. Like you said, Fachu, they have not been able to experience winning playoff basketball since that 17-18 series. So, you know, it went seven games. Cleveland ended up pulling it out. Indiana had a 2-1 lead in that series after the Bojan comeback game, because the Pacers got down by like 15, 20 points at one point to that Cavaliers team, but they had a great comeback. You know, it was kind of reminiscent tonight where the Bucks had the comeback, but Indiana held them off. So, just a lot of different parallels you can make here. But overall, I just think Indiana, their resiliency to not give up was the difference to me. And I think you're seeing a Rick Carlisle coach team kind of rising to the occasion. The late game execution, right? Like, he called timeout to advance the ball instead of letting them just run the ball up the court and try to get something going. Like, set up a play design. Talked about, like, they almost fouled Middleton there in the fourth quarter when they were up by 3 points after Nesmith hit two clutch free throws, which were just incredible. You know, it was one of those things where maybe you foul Brook Lopez when he's trying to do the dribble handoff with Middleton.
It was a good play that Doc drew up. I definitely got to give him credit for that.
But, I mean, honestly, it's just like, give Middleton the ball. Like, we knew
they were going to pass him directly. And the Pacers did play good defense.
They did.
On Middleton, it was just like, he had that, like, you know, that 1 or 2 inches of space that he was able to let it fly. And I just felt like I was stunned.
Yeah.
Each time he hit those shots, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I had friends texting me like, what's going on? I was like, guys, like, I can't do this right now. I can't. Yeah. Like, please, I don't want to like start talking about the ins and outs of the game when there's, you know, a couple of seconds left in that. And there was a lot of people chirping when things got rough. When the Pacers won, I didn't hear from any of them. So classic stuff. That's how it always goes. But I just think that the last thing that I'm going to really end it on is, you know, when Haliburton hits that shot, how could he not have the confidence moving forward to just be like, shake off the misses? Because that next shot could be your biggest. And that's something that I think is a life-changing thing. Like, I felt like, you know, he's had game winners before, but like not on a stage like this. This is something that gives you the confidence moving forward, in my opinion, I think, for life.
Second game winner over Pat Bev, right?
Yep. Second one. It doesn't matter what city, what jersey Pat Bev's wearing. Tyrese is going to hit a game winner over you. All right? Yeah. You can't run from it.
We'll hear Pat Beverly probably talk about this on the podcast at some point. But, it's a great point, though. The confidence from Tyrese moving forward, hopefully this does kind of catapult him into more of a confident state of mind. He definitely looked like, we talked earlier, more aggressive, looking for a shot, led the team in shot attempts. You know, no complaints there from anybody with him not shooting the ball enough. But at the same time, when you see him shooting the ball a lot, it's a different game. And, you know, if he hits a couple of those threes that he missed, you know, maybe you feel better about it. You know, Nimhard spotting up like 4 feet behind the three-point line still doesn't make any sense to me. I was like, that's a terrible shot, Nimhard. What are we doing? Obviously, shot clock was expiring when he had to shoot it. But, like, why are they lining him up there so far out? I mean, that's not his game. He had some big shots. But, yeah, I just really felt like this was a well-balanced game once again. And the Pacers, you know, they took care of business when they needed to. They found a way to, you know, hold off Middleton and his incredible game and Dame's incredible, you know, second half and the way he kind of came back and just put a lot of pressure on Indiana, especially drawing fouls. I just thought Indiana was composed, and now they've got a real chance to make this a 3-1 series lead and put all the pressure on Milwaukee to claw back and make this a series before they get, you know, potentially knocked out in the first round once again. Not saying it's going to happen, but that's what could happen if they win this game.
Anything could happen. This Pacers team does not do well when they get comfortable. I think when things go to their head and people start to talk about them a little bit, that is when, like we said, they take their foot off the gas a little bit, but you just hope that they have that killer instinct, smelling some blood in the water, knowing that this is a Milwaukee team that probably isn't going to respond as well with just about one day off of rest in between. They are banged up. The Pacers have to be able to capitalize and attack. And I do think that we're going to get a Pacers team that's going to feed off of that home crowd. And I think that that's going to make a very, very big difference. So if you're listening to this, please, if you can make it to Gainbridge, show up and show out. Tell your friends, be loud, make a difference, because we need you.
Absolutely, Flash. Well, let's go ahead and wrap things up. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Setting the Pace. It really does mean a lot. And for those that I got to meet, Ricky Kelly was one of the guys I got to meet tonight at the game. Longtime listener of this show. Thank you so much for meeting me up, at halftime so we could say hey. And somebody on Twitter was videoing me on the court, videoing the players. That was pretty funny. Thank you for videoing me and, you know, calling me out, you know. But anyway, if you guys are at the game and you happen to, like, see me there or you want to meet up, just let me know. I'm always happy to talk with you guys because, truly, this podcast does not exist without the fans. So you guys listening to us talk about this team, you know, we wouldn't be doing it as much or as consistent if it wasn't for the amount of response we get for you guys, you know, and telling us that you enjoy our conversation. So anyway, I apologize, Fauci. I took a little bit of time there to say that, but I would love for you to tell everybody where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPodSDP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok, Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to youtube.com/Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast where you can find all of our video content, especially all of our playoff content. Please subscribe. Let us know what you think in the comment section. And if you haven't already, check out the link in the description on YouTube, on Apple, on Spotify, and find our storefront at tpublic.com. Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast, is the name on there. And just follow the link in the description because you can see all of our merchandise there. I think there is a store-wide sale going on right now, too, once again. So everything is back to $16 off. I know they had jumped to $22, or not $16 off, $16 total. It was $22 without the discount. So make sure you guys get your merch there. I want to thank everybody that's bought the merch already and sent pictures in. I know Rooster did a mock version of his that he had to turn inside out because he was a little bit, too much with an F the Bucks, right? But I respect the hustle. And Aaron from Texas, Houston, Texas, he bought a Smear the Deer shirt. So thank you for your support. And those that haven't sent a picture in but have done it, thank you so much. But if you want to check it out, do that, Pot. You'd be great. But anyway, if you're excited for the Pacers, be back in action Sunday night with a chance to go up 3-1 over the Milwaukee Bucks, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.